As I said at the beginning of the program, anecdotally, there seems to be a lot of confusion about fats in our diet at the moment. Some practitioners are arguing that saturated fats are not only okay, they're so good for you that you should be swallowing coconut milk and even stirring butter into your coffee. Time for a spot of evidence, I thought. So I invited in one of Australia's leading authorities on dietary fat, Peter Clifton, who's Professor of Nutrition at the University of South Australia. Peter, thanks for joining us on the Health Report.
It's a pleasure.
What's your take on the confusion out there about fats?
I think the confusion has arisen because the original Heart Foundation position was that saturated fat was all bad, and it didn't really matter what you replaced it with, you would improve your cardiovascular health. That's changed. If you replace saturated fat with low-quality carbohydrates, poor in fibre, sugars, white bread, that kind of low-quality carbohydrate, you actually don't get any benefit from reducing saturated fat. So the heart disease rates are actually the same whether you have high carbohydrate or high saturated fat. So
why is that?
I think because the carbohydrate, especially in people that are overweight and obese, pushes up the glucose, and impaired glucose tolerance becomes as much a problem as high LDL cholesterol, which you get from saturated fat. So they're pretty equivalent in terms of cardiovascular risk now.
So before we get on to more on the dietary fats, let's, at the expense of boring the listener, okay, let's delve down into the bloodstream and the various fats, because there seems to be still some confusion about that. You know, so LDL, low-density lipoprotein, cholesterol is the baddie. But then some people say that there are a lot of these other proteins called APO, where if you've got APO and you lower your LDL, you're not going to get the benefit because you need to lower your APO proteins. I'm confused. So let's just get to the bloodstream, and then we'll pull back holistically to the diet.
Right. The bad guy with the LDL cholesterol has one protein on it, ApoB. So unless you actually lower your ApoB and reduce the number of LDL particles, you're not going to get any benefit in terms of lowering heart disease risk just by reducing the amount of cholesterol on the LDL particle.
So translate that for us.
Shrinking the amount of cholesterol you've got in the blood on the LDL cholesterol doesn't appear to have as much benefit as reducing the number of particles. So it seems to be the number of LDL particles.
So explain the particle story.
Cholesterol floats around attached to a particle because cholesterol is not soluble in water. So it needs to be in a particle that enables it to be solubilized.
It needs to catch a bus.
Indeed. So it catches a bus that's got protein, ApoB, and phospholipid, which solubilizes. So if it didn't sit on this bus, it would be on the surface of the blood and float like an oil-water interface. When it's got this bus that it's attached to, it's totally soluble in water and you can't see it.
And there's not just one kind of particle in the, there's more
millions,
than one, there's
right,
more than one bus that comes along.
Absolutely.
There's green ones, blue ones, red
absolutely,
ones, whatever.
Yes.
So just describe the different particles there are and their meaning.
Okay, so you have particles in the blood that are predominantly carrying triglyceride, which is an energy source. So they're very big particles. So when we eat fat, the particle, the chylomicron, is really large.
So this is what it's mushed up to into the bowel. It's like a milky substance that gets absorbed
right,
through the bowel.
Yes, that's right. So that's one kind of particle. When you have a large number of them, you get very white, milky kind of blood.
So when you get your blood lipids back and you say triglycerides and you're given a level for the triglycerides, how worried should you be about the triglyceride level in your blood?
You should be worried a little, not as much as whether your LDL cholesterol is high. So there's two reasons for worrying. One is if your triglyceride is really high, you can get pancreatitis, so inflammation of the pancreas, which is a nasty condition in which it basically destroys itself. So when it's over 10 millimoles per litre, then you're much more likely to get that. But if you have a condition in which you clear these particles out of the blood very slowly, even though the level may not be dramatically high, your heart disease risk is increased.
And you can reduce them by losing weight and reducing visible fat in your diet.
And alcohol.
Alcohol.
Alcohol is very good at producing triglyceride in the liver. So that's probably the number one provoking cause of high triglycerides. In addition, type 2 diabetes tends to have more triglyceride floating around.
So just as a distraction, since you brought up alcohol, because people thought that alcohol is a bit protective against heart disease, but you're saying it increases the triglycerides.
Yes. Whether or not it protects you against heart disease is still very argued, but probably one to two drinks a day does reduce your risk of heart disease.
But you wouldn't bet your life on it.
But I wouldn't put my life on it now. And I wouldn't recommend anybody takes up alcohol just for their heart disease.
So, okay, so the particles in the blood are important. There are different kinds. You've just talked about triglyceride, but you were also talking before that about cholesterol.
Right, which is in the LDL particle predominantly, right. And also in the HDL.
So the HDL has got the reputation for being the good form of cholesterol. Why does it have that reputation?
It appears to be quite good at taking cholesterol out of the cells and delivering it back to the liver.
So it's the return journey.
It's the return journey. In one, the direction is going into the cell, into the artery wall, and in the other, it's coming back out in the other direction.
Right. So let's move on to the other particles where the bus takes you to the artery and starts to cause damage.
Okay. So that's the LDL particle, which there are many, many different sizes.
And some small to large, and people say the small ones are the bad ones.
That's right. And the small ones tend to be smaller because of the triglyceride. So when your triglyceride is high, the particle gets smaller.
Uh-huh.
So again...
So triglyceride indirectly is a bad guy.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't mean the large particles are benign, because when you have conditions like familial hypercholesterolemia, where you have very high levels of LDL cholesterol...
A genetic risk,
yeah. So you have big, fluffy LDL particles, and they cause heart disease. But for the average person with an average LDL, if they have more of their cholesterol in little particles, they do worse than those that have more of their cholesterol in big particles.
What's a normal LDL level?
So up to about 3.5 millimoles per litre would be a normal LDL level.
If you haven't had a heart attack or a stroke.
If you haven't had a heart attack. Now, if you've had a heart attack, you really want your LDL to be as low as possible, under 2 and under 1.7, 1.5, 1.4, as low as you can get it, really.
And if you've got an LDL of, say, 1.7 or 2, but a high triglyceride, does that mean you haven't done the job well enough at this point?
Yes, so you're going to be at more risk than someone that's got a normal triglyceride and the same level of LDL cholesterol. That's right.
Right. So what do we know in our diet that's bad or good for that in terms of the fats and carbohydrates that you eat?
So we certainly know that if you reduce saturated fat and replace it with unsaturated fat, your LDL cholesterol will go down a bit. I mean, it's not particularly strong. Now, if you replace the saturated fat with low-quality carbohydrate, your triglyceride will tend to rise and your LDL will get smaller. So your risk is probably
not... So that's where you get stuffed
up.
That's
right. If you have high-quality carbohydrate with fiber and low GI, the triglyceride tends not to rise. Although it's the same amount of carbohydrate, the quality of the carbohydrate influences how the triglyceride changes, so your LDL is not likely to get small and dense.
So when you say unsaturated fat, you're talking about what, olive oil, canola...
Yes.
And polyunsaturated fats, such as the margarines...
Safflower, sunflower, all of those...
Does olive oil reduce your LDL in its own right, or is it just it only ever does that because it replaces saturated
fat?
That's
right. So if you just add olive oil to somebody's diet without removing their saturated fat, LDL cholesterol won't change.
But if you replace butter with olive oil...
That's right. It will go down. That's right.
So olive oil itself is neutral.
Yes, but...
There's always a but.
There's always a but. So olive oil contains lots of polyphenols, which is sort of bitter... antioxidant compounds, especially in green olive oil.
Extra virgin
olive oil. So those polyphenols probably play a role in reducing your risk of heart disease by reducing LDL oxidation.
So just to explain that, because we're now back into the body itself, it's not enough for LDL to be taken by the bus to the artery. The LDL then has to effectively be rusted.
That's right.
Oxygen's got to be added to it, oxidizing it.
Yes.
And what you're saying is...
Or glucose.
Glucose added to
yes,
it.
Yes, so glucose can be added.
So which is the significance of having high glucose in your bloodstream. Right. That makes it worse. And you're saying that there are effectively natural and quite strong antioxidants in extra virgin olive oil, which might have an influence
that's
in
right.
stopping the LDL doing its damage.
Absolutely.
So that's olive oil, and presumably canola, safflower are the same deal.
Well, they don't have so much in the way of polyphenols as olive does, and they actually actively lower your cholesterol. So if you just added a pile of safflower or sunflower oil to somebody's diet without changing their saturated fat, their LDL will fall a bit.
And why is that?
It shifts the balance of cholesterol in the liver cell from being free cholesterol to being a cholesterol ester. So it's a bit more storage. So it's actually easier for the cholesterol to be stored in the liver, which encourages the liver to take a bit more out of the blood, and that lowers the LDL cholesterol in the blood.
So it encourages it to be vacuumed a little bit.
That's right.
So what about this APO story? And, you know, there's no point in reducing your LDL unless you're attacking the APOs. And some people argue that some statins are better at this than others, and there's some competition between drug companies.
So I think probably the statins are not all that much different from each other in terms of ApoB versus cholesterol. But certainly there is a differentiation in risk between the amount of cholesterol in the particle versus the number of particles you've got. So that's probably the most important principle. And statins are probably relatively equivalent to each other.
And statins definitely work.
And statins definitely work. So there was interesting data that just came out the other day from the pravastatin trials, primary prevention in Scottish men. So there's 20-year data now. So even people
So we just explained this is the so-called WASCOP study.
That's right.
West of Scotland.
West of Scotland.
Which is where I hail from and has next to some
Had a very high coronary risk.
Yes, next to some parts of India.
Yes.
But I got out. What you're saying, and this was a prevention trial on people at high risk, which is just about everybody in the west of Scotland, and following them through. And the initial study, the initial results were pretty positive.
That's right. So basically the follow-up results showed that if you've got no other risk factors other than just a mildly elevated LDL cholesterol, but you're relatively young and you're going to be exposed to this high LDL cholesterol for 20 years, taking the statin reduces coronary deaths by 18 to 20%. So just attacking the high LDL alone is enough. You don't need to have all the other risk factors there as well.
So poor quality carbohydrate raises your triglycerides, raises your blood sugar, and the blood sugar, the glucose, and both of those will be bad for your LDL and your arteries.
Yes.
Let's look at saturated fat itself. Is there any difference between saturated fats? Because there's a growing trend to say, well, mammal versions of saturated fat are bad for you, but it's okay to take it in coconut oil.
There's no data to suggest that coconut oil is any better for you than animal derived. So if you have lauric acid, which is the C12, which predominates in coconut, when you test that in humans and experimental animals, it will put your cholesterol up. And if you feed it to experimental animals, it's been done for 50 years, it will give them atherosclerosis. So they'll get heart disease on high levels of coconut fat. Now, coconut also has got short-chain fatty acids, so much, much shorter than the C12, so 8 and 10 and 6.
So when you say C10, C12, this is the number of carbon atoms in a row.
In the chain, that's right. So they tend to behave differently compared to the C12, and they tend to be absorbed rather than in chylomicrons, but go into the lymphatics. So the metabolism is a bit different.
Again, we need to explain. So chylomicrons are the mushed up fats we talked about earlier that create a milky sense and are absorbed through the intestinal wall straight into the bloodstream. And what you're seeing is these short chains, they get absorbed directly, and then rather than going into the bloodstream, they go into the lymphatic system.
Yes.
The lymphatic system is a parallel system to the blood system, which tends to communicate immune cells around the body.
Yes.
And the effect of that is what?
You will not get an elevation in cholesterol when you're eating a lot of C6, 8, and 10. So if you have just the MCTs, the medium chain triglycerides that come out of coconut, and some people require those because they can't absorb normal length fat, your cholesterol won't rise and you'll tend to burn these fats for energy predominantly.
But can you get one without the other? I mean, coconut oil, you're getting both, aren't you?
Absolutely. So if you have coconut, you'll get both and your cholesterol go up. If you have MCT oil, which is an extract from coconut, which is expensive and not very pleasant to take, your cholesterol won't go up.
Right. Will it go down?
It won't go down either.
Right.
No.
So that's the fats. And any difference between, I assume that there's saturated fat in poultry.
Yes.
So is there any difference between the saturated fat in poultry, white meat, compared to red meat?
If you're having just as much fat that comes from chicken versus meat, and it's predominantly palmitic acid, which is the C16 version of the saturated fat.
So really long.
Really long. Then in theory, your cholesterol elevation should be just the same. So there are other factors in red meat that may be problematic. So it's not just the fat. So maybe the iron in red meat causes a problem as well. And iron's obviously quite good at oxidizing things.
And what is the difference between iron from, essentially a blood source, which is what you're getting from red meat, and iron from plants? Is there any difference in the effect on the body?
Probably not, but the iron from red meat is absorbed really well and the iron that's in plants is absorbed very poorly. So it's quite easy to get quite a lot of iron out of the red meat. And there's quite a lot of data, looking at iron stores and iron and blood donors and finding a relationship between iron levels and atherosclerosis.
Now, the diet of the moment in terms of evidence seems to be the Mediterranean diet.
Yes.
And there are, I think, 9 elements to the Mediterranean diet, something like that?
Yes, so there's a little bit of red wine. There's low meat, low dairy products, a small amount of dairy products, mostly is cheese, fruit and vegetables, legumes, and unsaturated fat, as predominantly olive oil.
So what happens, and we should say, because of those nine elements of the Mediterranean diet, there are Asian diets which are pretty close to that as well. So it's, whilst there's a Mediterranean version, some Asian diets adhere quite closely to those nine elements. Yeah. So if you adhere quite closely to those nine elements, I mean, I appreciate that your life expectancy probably goes up by about 6 years on average. You seem to get dementia later, cancer later, heart disease later. Understand all that. But what does it do to your blood fat profile?
On a full Mediterranean diet, you probably have lower levels of triglyceride because it's not a high carbohydrate diet. So you will tend to have lower triglyceride and slightly higher HDL. And because you've replaced the meat saturated fat that's in the Western diet with unsaturated fat from olive oil, your LDL cholesterol will tend to be low. So the profile will certainly be better.
Now, veganism is going up at a significant rate, if you look at the statistics, as is vegetarianism.
Yes.
Although there's the interpretation of what a vegan diet actually is by the users is sometimes confused. How does going off animal-based products entirely play into this?
There's no doubt that increased fruit and vegetable intake is associated with less heart disease, probably because of the fiber and the antioxidant content of the and potassium and magnesium in the fruit and vegetables. And the more of that that you eat, the lower your cardiovascular risk. Cancer doesn't appear to be affected. Now, there's a lot of controversy about vegetarianism and other confounding factors. And there's the famous Oxford study where they compared vegetarians to their friends who were living pretty much the same kind of lifestyle, but actually had meat in their diet, and there was no difference in any disease rates between the two of them. But there's probably...
Because education level, affluence, and
all of those other factors. But there's probably a reasonable amount of evidence from around the world that being vegetarian does lower your risk of cardiovascular disease, but it doesn't appear to lower your risk of cancer.
And finally, exercise, does that have an effect on your blood fats?
Exercise will lower your triglyceride and increase your HDL as a consequence of that.
And as we know, it will increase the size of your LDL cholesterol, and that's going to be good for you too.
Absolutely, yes. So exercise, and I'm sure exercise has many other effects as well as just changing your lipids, and maybe the lipid changes are relatively minor in terms of the heart disease risk.
Peter Clifton, thank you very much for joining us. It's been illuminating. Peter Clifton is Professor of Nutrition at the University of South Australia. You've been listening to The Health Report. I'm Norman Swan. Do join me next week.